attacked.
That's how I read it.
Yes. And then he struggled back up the path to get help.
What are you looking for? Hiding places. Somewhere
our murderer could have concealed himself. Now, that doesn't make sense. You can't see the clifftop from here. So he couldn't possibly have known that you were so close. He had no reason to hide, did he?
I thought not. If he'd still been on the beach as I came down the path, I'd have seen him at once.
It's like a locked room mystery.
A locked room mystery without walls. Virtually unique.
Amazing that you should just chance to be on the scene.
Well, at the risk of spouting clichés to a writer, life is supposed to be stranger than fiction.
Especially your life, seemingly.
Now, is there anything else I can tell you?
Yes, there is. There was nobody on the beach, but what about the sea? Any boats?
Excellent. Two fishing boats, but a considerable way out, and no signs of any craft being beached.
Very well. There's obviously no more to be learned here. Back to the top, I think. Did your companion, what was his name?
Stackhurst.
Yeah. Did he wait with the body while you went down to the beach?
Yes, but there was a development I haven't mentioned yet.
Ah, good. I could do with some new material. What happened?
A minute or so after Paul McPherson died.
Before you went down the path?
Yeah, and Stackhurst and I were kneeling over him when a shadow fell across us. Ian Murdoch.
For a deserted cliff, it seems to have been positively swarming. Is he from the school too?
Mathematics master. Tall, thin, dark, somewhat aloof. A fierce temper, so I'm told, though usually he managed to contain it.
A friend of the dead man?
Apparently not. There'd been some incident with McPherson's dog. Murdoch threw it through a plate glass window.
Good God. This is a man in charge of children.
Stackhurst told me he'd have dismissed him on the spot, but he was too valuable as a teacher.
How did he react to the sight of the body?
He seemed to be honestly shocked. Poor fellow. Poor fellow. What can I do? How can I help?
An act, do you think?
A good one if it was.
Which direction did he approach from?
Hard to say, I'm afraid. Our attention wasn't exactly on our surroundings.
So he could have come up the cliff path?
Well, if he did, it was very gingerly. I didn't see any footprints.
Did you suspect him at that particular moment?
He was close at hand. Logically, he was a suspect.
Yes, but how did he strike you? Was he acting suspiciously at all? You know, this is just like that damn stage play.
The similarities elude me.
Questions. All I'm doing is asking an endless string of questions. It's always you who gets the interesting speeches.
I thought you liked it that way.
Amazing, Holmes. That's incredible, Holmes. It all seems so simple now you explain it, Holmes. I'm not sure I want to go down in history as a literary device to make you seem even cleverer than you are.
Eight.
Not to mention lending credence to your more dubious deductions. Eight what?
What do you mean, dubious?
Eight what?
Consecutive sentences without a question mark.
Oh, for goodness sake, I'm talking about fiction. This is real life.
Is it?
Please. If we start discussing your precious Tibetan mysticism, we'll be here all day.
Do you think that will be long enough?
No, I don't. Now, let's get back to something more concrete before I forget everything you've told me so far. Now, you and Stackhurst were standing over poor McPherson's body when this dog-hurling mathematics tutor turned up. What then?
I sent Murdoch to inform the police in Fulworth. That's the nearest village. Then I left Stackhurst to guard the body and went to look at the beach. By the time I got back, Murdoch had returned with the official representative of the law, Constable Anderson, a member of that peculiar, slow Sussex breed.
Holmes.
Fond of good sense under a silent exterior.
You certainly have mellowed.
Good sense, which he instantly demonstrated by asking me for advice.
On the other hand, maybe not. What did you tell him?
To let no one touch the body until the doctor had seen it and to stop people trampling all over the scene. And then...
And then what?
And then I went home for breakfast.
Here you are.
Oh, thank you.
The lunch will be a few minutes. The landlord was slightly taken aback by your request for something with no meat in it.
Was he able to rise to the challenge?
Not with any great creativity. You're getting a cheese and pickle sandwich.
Oh, splendid. You?
I'm afraid I couldn't resist the roast beef. You did say you wouldn't mind.
Not in the least. I've no desire to inflict my idiosyncrasies on others.
Thank you.
The walk wasn't too much for you?
No, not at all.
Oh, no. Good, good.
What was it? A couple of miles?
No, nearer three. Well, to your success with the case.
Ah, thank you. It can't beat a real country brew.
Yes, I thought you'd appreciate it. But that's not why I brought you here.
Well, I hardly thought he was. So come on. What's the Fulworth connection?
This.
What is it?
Well, have a look.
Torn from a cheap writing pad, but done carefully. No jagged edges or bits missing. Folded once. And look how exact the alignment is. This was done by someone exceptionally neat and meticulous, a clear thinker, probably quite intelligent.
Watson, that is positively scintillating.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, it's also totally irrelevant.
Oh?
You were supposed to simply look at the message.
You're the one who told me that the outside of a letter can be as informative as the inside.
Not, alas, in this case, the message.
There you go. This is your handwriting.
Well, of course it is. The police would hardly have let me keep the original. It was vital evidence.
Well, how was I supposed to know what it was? Right, let's see. I will be there, you may be sure. Mordy.
The original was folded inside a card case in McPherson's left-hand trouser pocket.
He took it with him on his morning stroll?
He did.
What was the writing like?
Undoubtedly feminine, rather scrawling, done with a well-worn nib and perfectly ordinary ink.
And the paper?
Rather better quality than my cheap writing pad.
It wasn't meant as a criticism. Did you know this, Mordy?
No, but Stackhurst enlightened me. Miss Maud Bellamy lives in Fulworth with her father and her brother. She's the beauty of the neighbourhood, Holmes. Quite a one. Mm.
Did Stackhurst know about her connection with McPherson?
No. The full details only came to light later when the police went through McPherson's things at the school. The romance had been conducted in great secrecy.
The soup begins to thicken.
See what you meant about memorable phrases of your own.
What else do you know about the girl?
Her father's something of a man of substance in this village. Owns all the fishing boats and bathing huts. He worked his way up from nothing.
Someone like that can be fiercely protective. And the dead man had arranged an assignation with his daughter. Was he married, McPherson?
No.
And he had a good job with excellent prospects. Why the secrecy?
That was obviously something that had to be investigated. Stackhurst and I came here to talk to the Bellamys that same afternoon.
And?
Ah, here come the sandwiches. A supreme example of how enthusiasm can triumph over limited technique.
Oh, you think so?
Well, don't you?
I don't know that triumph is exactly the word I'd use.
The stress and strain of city life seems to be taking its toll on you, Watson. Hmm? Whatever happened to the tolerant man I used to live with?
A man only has so much tolerance in his soul, Holmes. You soaked it out of me like a sponge.
Take you me for a sponge, my lord?
Macbeth?
Oh, Hamlet, Act 4, Scene 2, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. I'm surprised you didn't remember that.
Holmes, no one remembers Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Most of the time, you can't even tell them apart.
I can't say I've ever had any problems. Oh, we're wasting time.
What do you mean, we? Tell me about your interview with the Bellamys.
Would you care for a toffee apple?
No, I would not care for a toffee apple, thank you.
Mr. Bellamy proved to be a middle-aged man with a flaming red beard and a generous head of hair.
Did he indeed?
Don't contain your enthusiasm, Doctor. I must admit that I had much the same thought.
The lion's mane.
He was also in a very angry mood. I'm of the opinion, sir, and my son's of like mind, that Mr. McPherson's attentions to Maud were insulting.
Insulting? That's a strange attitude.
The word marriage was never mentioned, and there were letters and meetings and a great deal more of which neither of us could approve.
So much for the secret liaison. I was right then, protective. Unless, of course, young McPherson really was just using the girl. You knew him pretty well. What did you think?
He was a respectful, old-fashioned sort, rather quiet. An admirable son-in-law, or so I'd have thought.
Did you ask Bellamy just why he objected so strongly?
I was about to, when the lady herself came in.
Well, what was she like?
Women have seldom been an attraction to me, Watson.
Seldom? Are you saying that she was an exception?
Certainly not.
Holmes, you're supposed to be giving me data, remember? Just tell me what she was like.
She would have graced any assembly in the world. A perfect, clear-cut face, delicate colouring, poise and control. No young man could have crossed her path unscathed. Watson.
What?
I've devoted my life to exploring the dark side of humanity. What have I missed?
There's no way to answer that.
No logical way, perhaps. And my brain has always governed my heart.
Not always.
What was it you wrote? All emotions were abhorrent to his cold, precise mind.
Early days. I hardly knew you then.
I've always prided myself on my detachment. A woman would have been a distraction.
I must remember to tell Jean you said so.
I meant my own wife, not yours.
Holmes, are you deliberately trying to stop me solving this mystery?
No, certainly not. It's infernally noisy here. Let's see what other delights Falworth Village has to offer.
Oh, that's better.
Cooler, certainly.
Yes.
Thickness of the walls. Mm. Norman's built to last. It's not too cold for you.
No.
Yeah, good.
What a splendid window.
Yeah. Now, Miss Maud Bellamy was wide-eyed and intense. Mm. I know that Fitzroy is dead. Don't be afraid to tell me the details.
Remarkable composure.
Yes, indeed.
Who told her the full story? You or Stackhurst?
Stackhurst.
And I imagine she took it well.
Extremely well. When Stackhurst had finished, she turned to me. It seemed that she knew who I was.
Prize of fame. What did she say?
Mr. Holmes, you have my sympathy and my help. Bring them to justice, whoever they may be.
Them? Why did she say that?
Oh, my question exactly. Sir, Fitzroy Macpherson was a brave and strong man. No single person could have done this to him.
The note in the dead man's pocket.
Yes, I asked her about it.
What did it mean?
I see no reason for any more mystery, Mr. Holmes. We were engaged to be married.
Why did you keep it a secret, Miss Bellamy?
Because Fitzroy stood to be disinherited if he married against his family's wish.
Well, why not tell your father and your brother?
My life is my own. I would have told them if they'd ever shown the slightest sympathy.
I will be there, you may be sure. Where, Miss Bellamy?
There was a place on the beach where we used to meet.
And when?
Just after sunset, tonight. Any more questions?
Did she know if Macpherson had any enemies?
None in the world.
And yourself? Is there anyone who would want to harm you?
No one.
Anyone who might be jealous of your fiancée? Have you had any previous admirers?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. Several.
Including Mr. Ian Murdoch.
There was a time when I thought so.
Was there indeed? Well, I can't think of anything else. Have I missed anything that you asked?
Not a thing. Bravo.
Thank you. I'm not sure he's got me anywhere.
There is one thing I haven't told you yet.
To do with Miss Bellamy?
Most definitely. You remember her words at the beginning of the interview?
You mean about bringing them to justice?
Whoever they might be, yes. As she said that, it seemed to me that she looked straight at her father and her brother.
3:45. On to the next place.
There isn't one.
You're staying in Falworth?
That's not what I meant. You're now in possession of practically all the facts.
Practically all? What about the findings of the inquest?
It was adjourned for further evidence.
What will you have done? You examined the beach again.
But with no more success than the first time.
The dead man's room at the school?
Nothing.
Then you would have gone over the whole case and tried the old eliminate the impossible approach.
Be my guest.
Right. The facts first, then. A popular and talented young man sets off as usual for his morning swim. Did he always go alone, by the way?
I asked Stackhurst that very question. No, he didn't. Quite the contrary. A few of the students almost always went with him.
Did they indeed? What happened that morning?
Ian Murdoch set them a maths test before breakfast.
Now, that's downright suspicious.
I thought so. Carry on.
Macpherson gets to the beach, prepares for his swim, but before he can get into the water, he's savagely attacked with some sort of flail or whip.
Look at these. Yes, photographs of the wounds.
Good God. That's inhuman. Why didn't you show me these earlier?
Because I didn't get them myself until this stage of the investigation. I hadn't seen the wounds in this much detail until now.
Right. These lacerations are remarkably thin.
Yes.
As if they were made with very fine wires. Do you have your lens with you?
Yes, here.
Thank you. Now, these wounds aren't even. There are dots of blood spaced all along them. A very fine cat and nine tails? It's devilish, whatever it was. After all these years, I still find it hard to believe that one human being can do something like that to another.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
That's true, I suppose. Cynical, but true. Ah, suppose Murdoch set his test, then hurried out to the beach. No, Stackhurst would have seen him. Is there another route?
Yes, another path down the cliff nearer the school and then along the beach.
So, he sets his test, rushes out unseen, gets to the lagoon and attacks McPherson. Then he hides in one of the grottos in the cliff face until he can slip away.
I thought you decided that he had no reason to hide.
Because at the top of the cliff is invisible from the beach, yes. Perhaps he's just afraid that there might be someone about. Criminals are cowards, superstitious. It's not very convincing. What about other possible murderers? The Bellamys, I suppose, father and son. Yes, I really believe it. A man with money and local influence doesn't need to resort to murder just to get rid of an unwelcome lover. Could you have been mistaken about that, Clarence?
Yes, I could.
Eliminate the impossible.
Time to give you the next developments, I think.
I'm listening.
McPherson's dog was found dead on the beach at the very place where his master died.
His dog? Did you examine it?
Shortly after it was found. The body was stiff and his eyes were bulging. There was agony in every line of it.
Killed by the murderer? But why, for God's sake?
Some sort of revenge. I didn't know.
You said developments, plural.
I think it's only fair to tell you that I had the first glimmerings of an idea about them.
May I ask what sort of glimmerings? Or would that be cheating?
It was something I couldn't quite put my finger on. Have you ever had one of those nightmares where you feel that there's some all-important thing? You search for it, you know it's there, but you don't know exactly what it is, and it's always just out of your reach. That's how I felt.
Yes, I know what you mean. The harder you try, the more elusive it gets.
Yes, precisely.
The best solution is to give up the struggle. Let it surface in its own good time.
Well put.
Eliminate the impossible. What were the other developments?
There was just one. Someone else was attacked, exactly as McPherson had been. Ian Murdoch.
Murdoch too? Yes. Yes! What exactly happened?
I was at home. He burst into my sitting room with Stackhurst close behind him. He'd found Murdoch down on the beach.
The same spot?
Almost exactly. Murdoch's shoulder was marked with the same wounds and he was in agony.
Brandy to deaden the pain, something soothing on the cuts. Did he have any cream, soft butter, something like that?
Salad or...
Yes, that would have done it a pinch.
It seemed to help. Murdoch was already half in a faint and the brandy put him right out. We sent word for a doctor and while we were waiting, Stackhurst told me what had happened. Well, Holmes, I was walking...
Wait! Let me see if I'm right. No, let me ask you this first. What was Murdoch wearing?
A bathing costume covered by his coat.
Yes. And Stackhurst found him at the very edge of the lagoon. He'd been swimming.
Bravo, Doctor.
I have another question.
I rather thought you might have.
What did you find, McPherson? You said he was naked from the waist up.
I did.
Describe his trousers.
Grey wool.
Oh, damn it, Holmes, you know what I mean.
Clumsily fastened, somewhat crumpled.
You might have told me that at the very beginning.
I didn't realize the importance of it myself until considerably later.
And his hair. What about his hair?
I rather think you can answer that yourself.
He was in the habit of anointing it with oil. Slicking it down close to his scalp.
Absolutely correct. Do you have the solution?
Not all of it. Not yet. Did you, at that stage?
Yes, but I had a distinct advantage not available to you.
You were in your own home.
I was.
With your own books.
With my own books.
And you've always been quite a collector of books. Every subject under the sun.
I'm an omnivorous reader.
It was something you'd read. The thing you couldn't recall. It was something you'd read in your own library, so you were able to find it again. Or did you just remember it out of the blue?
As you said, it surfaced. Home.
Home.
Watson?
Yes?
Well done!
Now, which one?
Would you like me to show you?
No. Just give me a moment. Ah! Damn... But I'm close. I must be close.
Extremely.
Then, here we are.
Yes, show me.
Out of Doors by J.G. Wood.
The famous observer.
That's high praise coming from you.
Never read it.
No, but you have, and recently, too. There's a clear fingerprint in the dust along the top, you see?
Seems I must speak to Martha about her standards of cleanliness.
You're changing the subject. Now I know I'm right.
Well, aren't you going to look inside?
Not yet. I'd rather think that this is that moment in the spotlight you promised me.
I want to enjoy it.
You deserve it. The stage is yours.
Thank you. Now, the most important clues were the dead man's trousers and the oil on his hair.
But why, Holmes? I mean, what's...
Together with the unusually high temperature that day, even before breakfast. When you found the body, you were too distracted to realize the significance of the trousers, but you couldn't have missed noticing it if the man was soaking wet.
He wasn't.
And so you concluded that he hadn't got as far as going for his swim. But you were wrong. The early morning sun had dried his body, and the oil prevented his hair from getting wet. The trousers
puzzled.
But you said it yourself. McPherson was an old-fashioned, withdrawn, very proper sort of man.
Well, even so.
Perhaps I've had more experience of it than you. It may be hard to accept, but it's true. Even if the body's in terrible agony, there's a part of the brain that concerns itself with the most ordinary, mundane, everyday thoughts, such as not leaving a secluded bathing beach and going into a public place without first making oneself decent.
I was forced to accept it in the end.
What it all adds up to is this. He wasn't attacked before he took his swim. He was attacked during it. And the same was true of Ian Murdoch and even the wretched dog. And what's more, it wasn't murder. Am I right?
Absolutely right.
Does this book have an index?
The page you want is 73.
Oh, yes. Behold the lion's mane!
You enjoyed the weekend, I hope.
Enormously. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Yes, I hope so.
Sometime soon, Holmes.
I can't promise you another murder.
You didn't give me one this time.
Don't be pedantic.
Not pedantic. Accurate. Did you?
Did I what?
Enjoy the weekend. Or will you be glad to get back to your peace and quiet?
Ah, stand back.
Right.
Have a good trip.
Thank you.
Oh, here.
What is it?
Something to read on the journey.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Watson.
Goodbye.
Start on page 12.
Right. Goodbye. See you soon.
The Adventure of the Lion's Mane by Sherlock Holmes. Page 12. I led the way along the beach, peering eagerly into the waters. I had reached the deepest and stillest part of the lagoon when my eyes caught it. Cyanea, I cried. Cyanea. Behold, the lion's mane.
The strange object did indeed look like a tangled mass torn from the mane of a lion. It lay some 3 feet under the water, a curious, waving, vibrating, hairy creature with streaks of silver among its yellow tresses. It pulsated with a slow, heavy dilation and contraction. Cyanea capillata is the miscreant's full name, gentlemen. The gale must have blown him into the shore. As dangerous as the bite of the cobra, and far more painful. The most deadly of all the jellyfish. The constable stared at me in silence. "Well, you've done it," he said at last. "I'd read about you, but I never believed it. It's wonderful." I was forced to shake my head. To accept such praise was to lower one's standards.
Really, Holmes, couldn't you come up with a better ending than that?
In The Lion's Mane, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Merrison and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Lion's Mane was dramatized for radio by Bert Cools and directed by Patrick Rayner.
What were you thinking of, Bannister? What possessed you? And today of all days?
Well, will you be calling in the police, Mr. Soames?
The police? I had not thought of that. I trust that can be avoided. That must be avoided.
Oh, Mr. Soames, sir. I don't think...
Good heavens, man. What is it? Here, let me help you. You'd better sit down.
Yes, sir. I think near the window, sir. I need air.
There you are. I better get you some brandy, I suppose.
Oh, thank you,
sir. I hope this will not become a matter for the police. Drink this.
Oh, thank you, sir.
In my mind, in the back of my mind, there is a memory. Last night, in the dining hall, the librarian said, and others too were aware of what he had to say, that could be our answer. That could be our salvation. The reputation of the college is at stake. St. Luke's, the Fortescue Prize. My own reputation is at stake.
The Three Students by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Dennis Hawthorne. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson, and featuring Dennis Hawthorne as Hilton Soames and Desmond Llewellyn as Bannister. The Three Students.
At what time is supper to be served?
7:30, Mrs. Burdick said.
Another 3/4 hour.
I must confess that I already have an appetite.
That's the problem of living in lodgings, Watson. One's appetites are at the mercy of one's landlady's inflexibility.
But these are good diggings, are they not?
Oh, yes, excellent, excellent. They're quiet, spacious, and close to the university library. Couldn't ask for better.
How are your researches progressing? Was today fruitful?
Yes, it was. It's a laborious task, researching into early English charters.
No question of that.
Yes, another day or two should finish me here, and then we can return to London. Not a moment too soon.
Oh, I'm surprised to hear you say that, Holmes. I would have thought the atmosphere of a great university town, the groves of Academe, the pursuit of knowledge, I would have thought all this to have been congenial to you. For myself, I'm enjoying our visit here. I enjoy writing up our cases. And when I'm not so engaged, I enjoy visiting the various colleges, browsing in the bookshops. Yes, this afternoon I took myself to the university athletic ground and watched the young men training. Yes, very pleasant indeed.
No doubt, Watson, no doubt. But the mysteries that I'm trying to unravel in the university library are of a somewhat arid kind. Indeed, the atmosphere in a university town is also arid. It lacks the drama of real human conflict, of day-to-day urgency. It's too complacent, too unruffled. Who can that be? I was under the impression no one knew we were here.
Oh, so was I. I think, nonetheless, I'd better answer it.
Ah, Dr. Watson, thank heavens I have found you in. Is Mr. Holmes here? May I talk to him? I must talk to him.
Oh, well, I don't know.
We have met before, Doctor, albeit it was some time ago. My name is Soames. We met in the company of...
Watson, what does he want?
Come in. Holmes, this is...
Yes, I know very well who it is. It's Mr. Hilton Soames, lecturer and tutor at the College of St. Luke's. You're a Greek scholar, and we met some years ago in the company of my brother, Mycroft. How did you know we were here?
Well, university towns are small towns, Mr. Holmes. It is difficult to hide in them.
So it would appear. What can I do for you?
We have had... There has been a very painful incident at St. Luke's.
Of a criminal nature?
I fear so.
That surely is a matter for the police.
No, no, my dear sir. Such a course is utterly impossible. Once the law is invoked, it cannot be stayed again. And in this case, involving as it does the credit of the college and my own good name, it is most essential to avoid scandal. Since your discretion is as well known as your powers, you are the one man in the world who can help.
I think we ought to listen to what Mr. Soames has to say.
So do I, Watson, so do I. Sit down, Mr. Soames. Yes, compose yourself and expound.
Oh, thank you. I must tell you that tomorrow is the first day of the examination for the Fortescue Prize, and I am one of the examiners.
That is a valuable prize, is it not?
A great deal of money is involved, and a great deal of prestige.
Since you're an examiner, one may assume that at least one of the papers is Greek.
Yes, indeed. The first paper consists of a large passage of Greek translation. Now, today at 3:30, the page proofs of that paper arrived from the printers. I had, of course, to read them over very carefully to make sure that the text was absolutely correct. At 4:30, I had not completed my task, but I had engaged myself to take tea in the rooms of a colleague. I left the page proofs upon my table, and when I returned...
Let us leave your return for a moment. Let us follow your actions through. You locked the door to your rooms.
Of course.
Most college rooms are designed on the same principle, are they not? A common hall and staircase with rooms opening off it. You occupy the ground floor set, hmm?
That is so.
And you closed and locked the door?
Yes. I tested it to make sure that the bolt had gone home, and I put the key in my pocket.
Your right-hand pocket?
Well, yes, but
everything about you, Mr. Soames, your stance, your gestures, the shading on your shaved chin, all these show you to be a man of the right. You went on your way.
I did, yes.
How long did your tea appointment last?
A little under an hour.
So, you returned about 5:30?
Yes. The college clock was striking the half hour as I returned to my rooms.
And on your return, what did you find?
As I approached the door of my rooms, I was amazed to see a key in it. For an instant, I imagined that I had left my own there. But on feeling into my pocket, I found that that was not the case. The only duplicate which exists, insofar as I am aware, is that which belongs to my servant, Bannister. A very superior man whose honesty is above suspicion.
So, the door to your rooms was unlocked.
You went in. What did you observe?
It was immediately clear to me that someone had interfered with the papers. They were in 3 long strips. I had left them together in the correct order.
On your table?
Yes. But now I observed that one of them was lying on the floor. One was on a side table near the window. The third was still on my table.
Page 1 on the floor, page 2 on the window table, page 3 on your own work table, where you had initially left all 3.
Precisely. How could you possibly know
that? You are in an urgent mood when you arrived here, Mr. Soames. Press on with your tale.
I summoned Bannister at once and confronted him with the situation. He admitted that the key was his. He said that he had come to see if I wanted tea, and finding that I was not in, he had gone away, leaving his key in the lock of the door. This forgetfulness would have mattered little on any other occasion, but on this day, of all days, it has resulted in the most deplorable situation. The examination takes place tomorrow. The examination papers have been tampered with.
What was Bannister's reaction to this discovery?
He was very much upset. He nearly fainted when I questioned him.
Fainted in what fashion? Did his eyes roll, his mouth foam? Was he suddenly prone upon the floor?
He started to stumble about. His balance was impaired. I had to help him into a chair.
And then what did you do?
I gave him some brandy.
Oh, dear. What? Do you have something to say?
It is a popular misconception that people under stress require stimulants. The reverse is the truth.
Watson is often accurate and to the point. So... Bannister, your servant, is in an armchair, a glass of brandy in his hand.
He mentioned the possibility of police involvement. At once, I realised what that would entail. The reputation of the college, the probity of the Fortescue Prize, my own reputation and self-esteem. It concentrated my mind wonderfully. I made a careful examination of the room.
Well done. What did you find?
On the table, by the window, were several shavings from a pencil which had been sharpened. A broken tip of pencil lead was lying there also.
Someone had copied the passage of Greek from the page proofs. He had done so in a great hurry, in such a hurry as to break his pencil and to have been compelled to put a fresh point to it. Yes, go on.
I have a new writing table with a surface of fine red leather. There is now a clean cut in it, about 4 inches long.
A scrap?
No, a positive cut. On the table also, I found a small ball of clay, a kind of black dough, with specks of what looks like sawdust mixed into it. It's difficult to describe. It's not quite a ball, more pyramid-shaped.
Have you brought it with you?
No. I thought it better to disturb nothing.
Fortune has been our friend, Mr. Soames. The puzzle is full of interest, and there are clues aplenty. The man Bannister, did you leave him in your rooms?
I did.
What did you do with the page proofs?
I secured them in a cupboard, of which only I possess a key.
Yes, well, I think we must visit St. Luke's at once, Watson, don't you?
Will we be back in time for supper?
We'll do our utmost.
Yes, I will fetch the overcoats.
Did anyone visit you in your rooms after the papers came to you?
Yes, young Dalat Ras, an Indian student. He came to ask me some particulars about the examination.
For which he is entered?
Yes.
Yes, when he called, the papers were on your table, in full view.
To the best of my knowledge, they were still rolled up.
But they might be recognisable as page proofs.
Possibly, I suppose. Here we are, gentlemen.
Yeah. Before we go in, Mr. Soames, let's observe your rooms from the outside. I'd like to look at the window.
Oh, if you think that is of moment, by all means. Follow me through the arch here. That will bring us into the court. Those are my rooms. That is the main window.
Yes, the windowsill. It's quite high up, is it not? Yes, even standing on tiptoe, I can barely see into the room, and I'm 6 feet in height.
I think I see your drift. And indeed, it had crossed my mind. But I assure you that the rascal must have entered from the inside, by the door. There is no opening in the window but the one pane.
Oh, dear me, I am grateful to you for pointing that out. So, if there's nothing to be learned here, we'd better go inside. What took place is very clear. The man entered and took the papers, sheet by sheet, from the central table, your work table. He carried them over to the window.
To benefit from the extra light.
No, Watson, he did so because from there he could see when Soames came across the courtyard and so could effect his escape.
As a matter of fact, he couldn't, since I entered by a side door and did not cross the court.
Ah, that is good. That is worthwhile evidence. But I assure you that that was what was in the intruder's mind. May I see the actual page proofs?
Of course. They are in this cupboard.
Ah, good.
Would that I had locked them here in the first place.
Now, let me see. Yes, there appear to be no finger impressions. Yes. Well, he carried over this one first and copied it. How long would it take him to do that?
Oh, a quarter of an hour at least.
Good. He finished that one, tossed it down, and seized the next. He was in the midst of that when your return caused him to make a very hurried retreat. Very hurried, since he'd not time to replace the papers which would tell you that he'd been there. He wrote so furiously that he broke his pencil and had to sharpen it again. Observe the shards of wood that fell from the resharpened pencil. Watson, what did they tell you?
Well, not a great deal, really. It was certainly done in a hurry. Roughly, I might say. The pencil was dark blue.
The pencil that was used to copy the examination paper was about the usual size, with a soft lead. The outer colour, well, observe, Watson, was indeed dark blue. The maker's name was printed in silver lettering, and the piece of pencil remaining is only about an inch and a half long. Look for such a pencil, Mr. Soames, and you've got your man. When I add that he possesses a large and very blunt knife, you have an additional aid.
You have not altogether taken me with you, Mr. Holmes. I can follow all your points, but the length of the pencil I am lost.
But observe. Here is a small chip of wood, dark blue. On it is printed in silver the letters NM. Following those letters, there's a space of clear wood. Mr. Soames, when we were outside in the courtyard just now, making an exterior examination of your rooms, you were quick to say that you could see my drift. Here is a piece of interior evidence. Do you see my drift in this instance?
I fear not.
What could this NN be? It is the end of a word. You're aware that Johann Faber is the most common of all pencil makers' names. Is it not clear that there's just as much of the pencil left as usually follows the Johann? Ergo, the pencil is a short one. Now, for your work table.
Well, yes, you see the cut that I spoke of.
Yes, I do indeed. Now, you describe it as a cut. It is, in truth, a tear, beginning with a thin scratch and ending in a positive hole. Now, this small pellet is, I presume, the black, doughy mass that you spoke of. Yes, roughly pyramidal in shape and hollowed out, I perceive. As you said, there appears to be grains of sawdust in it. Do you see, Watson?
Yes, interesting.
More than that, Watson, it's very interesting. Mr. Soames, I'm indebted to you for directing my attention to this case. Now, where does that door lead to?
Oh, to my bedroom.
I'd like to have a look round.
Oh, well, I suppose so. Yes, of course, allow me.
Thank you. What a charming, old-fashioned room. What is behind that curtain?
I keep my clothes there.
Yes. If anyone were forced to conceal himself in this room, he must do so there. The bed is too low for concealment. Watson, Soames, stand back. I'm going to draw the curtain. Nothing. Nothing at all. Except your suits, Mr. Soames. All the same, I wonder... Hello, what's this? Now, well now, gentlemen, our search has not been in vain. What's this?
It's another of the pellets.
A black, doughy mass. With
grains of sawdust in it. Your visitor seems to have left traces here, as well as your study, Mr. Soames.
What could he have wanted in my bedroom?
It's clear enough. You came back by an unexpected way, and so he had no warning until you were at the very door. What could he do? He caught up everything which might betray him and rushed into the bedroom to conceal himself.
Good heavens! Do you mean to tell me that all the time I was talking to Bannister, we had the man prisoner if we'd only known it?
Yes, so I read it. Mr. Soames, I understand you to say that there are three students who use this stairway and are in the habit of passing your door.
Yes, there are.
And all three are in for this examination?
Yes.
Tell me about these students.
Well, in the... lower of the three rooms, immediately above me, that is occupied by Gilchrist, a fine scholar and athlete, plays in the rugby and cricket teams for the college, and got his blue for the hurdles and the long jump. He is a fine, manly fellow. His father was Sir Jabez Gilchrist.
Sir Jabez Gilchrist? I remember him, quite notorious in his day. He ruined himself, did he not? Gambling.
Horses, yeah. The turf.
Alas, that is so. Young Gilchrist has been left very poor. But he is hard working and industrious and will do well.
And on the next floor?
Dalat Ras.
The Indian.
A steady, methodical man, well up in his work, though Greek is his weak subject.
And on the top floor?
Miles McLaren. Brilliant fellow when he chooses to work. One of the brightest intellects of the university. But he is idle, dissipated, wayward in his habits. He has been gambling heavily all this term and must contemplate the examination with dread.
And it is he whom you suspect?
No, no, I did not say so, did I? I will not go so far as that. Let me say only that of the three, he is the least unlikely.
Precisely. Now, I should like to talk to your servant Bannister.
Yes, I will call him.
Before you do, one thing. After you'd discovered the occurrence, you summoned Bannister. He came to you, you told him what had happened, he felt faint and had to sit down.
Yes?
Yes, the chair by the window. You said this chair?
Yes.
Yes, a long way from the doorway. He stumbled across the room.
I helped him.
You gave him a brandy.
Unwise.
Yes. Ask him to come here.
At once. Bannister! Bannister, come here, please.
It is within the rooms, Watson. The answer to the riddle is here.
The window?
I think not.
The work table?
That is part of it.
He is on his way.
Yes, it's best that he should not know who we are.
Ah, yes, indeed.
You called, sir?
Bannister, yes. These gentlemen...
We are from the university board, Bannister, and we're investigating this unhappy business. We think you can be of help.
Yes, sir.
When you unlocked the door of this room to find Mr. Soames absent, did you look at the papers on the table?
Oh, no, sir. Certainly not.
How came you to leave the key in the door?
Oh, I had the tea tray in my hand. I thought I'd come back for the key. But then I forgot.
So, anyone in the room could get out?
Oh, yes, sir.
When Mr. Soames returned and called for you, you were very much disturbed.
Oh, I was, yes. Well, such a thing has never happened during the many years that I've been here. I nearly fainted, sir.
Yeah, so I understand. Where were you standing when you began to feel faint?
Where was I? Well, here, sir. Near the door.
Ah, that is singular, because on feeling faint, you sat down on that chair over yonder, near to the corner. Why did you bypass these other chairs,
Well, I don't know, sir. Well, it didn't seem... Well, I really don't...
You stayed on here after your master left?
Well, only for a minute or so, sir. Then I locked the door and I went to my room.
Whom do you suspect?
Oh, I wouldn't venture to say, sir. I don't believe there's any gentleman in this university who is capable of profiting by such an action. No, sir. I'll not believe it.
Thank you. That will do.
Thank you, Bannister.
One more word, Bannister. You've not mentioned to any of the three gentlemen whom you attend to that anything's amiss.
Oh, no, sir. Not a word.
Huh. Very good. You may go.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Mr. Holmes, what is to be our next move?
Our next move? We're going back to the quadrangle.
Mr. Holmes, time is passing, and I need to make decisions.
In due course, sir, in due course. But first, let us look again at the exterior of your rooms.
All the windows are lit up now.
Yes, so they are. Last-minute revision before tomorrow's ordeal, I have no doubt. So, our three birds are all in their nests.
One of them seems restless enough. Look in the middle room. Someone is pacing up and down. Very agitated.
Dalat Ras. That is not in character. He is, as a rule, the calmest of men.
I should like to have a peep at each of them.
Well, I don't know. It is the night before the examination.
An examination which you may have to postpone. This is a matter for urgency. It's also a matter for subterfuge, for disguise. Let me see. Here, I shall represent myself as the college surveyor, carrying out an urgent internal inspection of rooms. You, Watson, can be the builder's foreman.
Oh. But couldn't I be...
No, you couldn't. Soames, allow me to borrow your glasses, your hat and your scarf.
No, I... Why?
I assure you that it's necessary. There's always the possibility that I might be recognised, but these simple props will, I am sure, serve me well.
If you say so.
Yes.
Hat,
yes.
Glasses, scarf.
Thank you, yes. Disguise is something that I've studied closely and often made use of. It's a matter of attention to detail and self-confidence. See, the hat low on the forehead, the glasses close against the eyes, the scarf wound in such a way as to conceal the chin. There's a slight hunching of the shoulders, and perhaps, yes, a suggestion of nasal congestion in the voice. Et voila, the college surveyor. Sorry to disturb you, gentlemen, but I have a very brief investigation to make.
Good heavens, quite astounding.
Holmes is a master of disguise. He once penetrated our rooms in Baker Street dressed as a coalman. I had no idea it was he.
Come along, Foreman Watson. Gilchrist's rooms are on the first floor, are they not, Holmes?
Yes.
We'll work our way upward.
Who's that?
Mr. Gilchrist, sir.
Yes, who are you? What do you want?
I'm sorry to disturb you, sir. It's the college surveyor carrying out an inspection.
This is a strange time to be doing such a thing.
I realise that, sir, but it was a question of making sure that you were in. It won't take more than a few moments.
Well, I suppose it's all right. Come in.
Thank you, Mr. Gilchrist. Thank you very much. Yes, it's a question of the windows. We've already carried out an exterior survey and... this is Watson, our foreman to the college builders.
Evening, sir.
Yes, I'll need to make a quick sketch from the inside.
I see. Well, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Now, let me see. Oh, dear. I seem to have broken the lead in my pencil. I wonder, could you oblige, sir?
A pencil? Yes, here you are.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah. The pain in the right angle. So... Thank you, Mr. Gilchrist. I wonder, could I borrow a knife to sharpen my own pencil with?
Certainly, here you are. You won't be doing any work here this evening, will you?
Oh, no, sir, no. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Now, this is a very preliminary matter. I'm sorry to have disturbed you. Come along, Watson.
Yes, sir. Good night, sir.
Good night.
Pencil is green in colour, and three quarters of it's unused. That is not the pencil.
The knife, sharp as a scalpel. So he is not the man.
He is not the man who's presented us with a pencil we seek. Further than that, I will not go. Now, for the restless Indian.
I'm busy, and I'm not to be disturbed.
We won't disturb you for a moment or two, Mr. Rass. This is Mr. Watson, foreman to the college builders.
Evening, sir. Sorry for the upset.
I am the college surveyor. I'll need to make a quick inspection of your rooms.
Inspection? I am preparing for an important test. I cannot be interrupted in this manner. Mr. Soames
would not... Mr. Soames knows that we're here. I must seek your permission. Mr. Gilchrist below had the same reservations, but it only took a moment or two, and he was happy to oblige.
Oh, well, if Gilchrist... I suppose in that case you had better come in.
Yes, sir.
What is it you wish to see?
Yeah, it's a matter of the window, sir. The window. I need to make a quick sketch of it.
The window? The window is unsound?
Oh, no, sir. No. Nothing like that. Well, perhaps eventually that will be Mr. Watson's problem.
Mere structural.
For the moment, all I need to do is make a drawing. Oh, dear. I seem to have broken the lead in my pencil. I wonder, could you oblige, sir?
You wish to borrow a pencil?
If you'd be so kind.
For a surveyor to be supplied with but one pencil seems not quite correct. Show me the broken pencil.
Ah, here it is, sir. As you can see.
Indeed, I do see. What you need is a knife, not another pencil. You may borrow my knife.
Oh, thank you, sir.
As a foreman builder, Mr. Watson, do you not carry a supply of pencils and measuring devices?
As a rule, yes, but this evening the surveyor is taking a quick journey, a visit.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ress. Here's your knife. I'm sorry we disturbed you.
I am not interested in your apologies. I am preparing for an important academic test tomorrow morning, and I will see to it that the college masters know of this disturbance that you have caused. I trust we will not meet again.
A very extreme reaction. Soames said he was the calmest of men.
Yes, but you saw him pacing about in his room when we looked in from the outside.
I did. We all did. Would you not say he had something to hide?
Well, you know me. For the moment, I say nothing. Now, we've arrived at the top nest, and Mr. McLaren.
Who are you? Why are you? Get back to from whence you came.
Mr. McLaren, I'm sorry to disturb you, but being as I am the college surveyor, I have to ask you if you'd mind...
Disturb me? You've already disturbed me. College surveyor? What is that? Who is that? I have an exam tomorrow. I am trying to work. And I won't be drawn by anyone.
No, it was Mr. Soames who suggested that...
Soames? That dithering old nannygoat. Now you listen to me, Mr. College Surveyor. You can go to blazes. If you persist to such an extent that you force me to open this door, it will only be to throw you down the stairs, where you will doubtless fetch up at the door of nannygoat Soames. I want no more of ye other than the sound of departure. Understood?
A rude fellow. I warned you, Holmes.
How tall is McLaren exactly?
Well, really, I cannot undertake to say exactly. He is taller than the Indian, but not so tall as Gilchrist. Mm. I suppose 5'6" would be about it.
Thank you. And now I bid you good night.
But good heavens, you are surely not going to leave in this abrupt fashion. I must take some definite action tonight.
I'll drop around tomorrow morning and chat matters over. It's possible that I may be in a position then to indicate some course of action. Meanwhile, change nothing.
If you say so.
I do say so, and you can be perfectly easy in your mind. We shall find some way out of your difficulties. One thing, I shall take the pieces of black clay with me. Thank you. Good night. Well, Watson, what do you make of it?
A sort of a three-card trick, is it not?
Sort of three students, and it must be one of them. Your takes your choice.
Which is yours?
That foul-mouthed fellow on the top landing. He's the one with the worst record, the most to lose.
Mr. Ross?
The Indian? Well, I must say he did strike me as being a sly fellow.
Gilchrist, what did you make of him?
I liked his frank and easy manner, the readiness with which he admitted us to his rooms. But McLaren wouldn't let us in. He has something to hide. The pencil and the knife, perhaps.
The pencil and the knife are no longer relevant.
But surely three students, three motives.
And the fourth man? Bannister. The servant. What's his game in the matter?
Bannister? But he strikes me as being a perfectly honest man.
Oh, so does he me. And that's the puzzling part. Why should a perfectly honest man... Oh, by Jove, my dear fellow, it's 8:30. Our landlady spoke of green peas at 7:30. Really, Watson, what with your pipe smoking and your unpunctuality at meals, I expect you'll be given your marching orders. And if you get your notice to quit, I dare say I'll have to share your downfall. Not, however, before we've solved the problem of the nervous tutor, the careless servant, and the three enterprising students. Let's hurry back to our supper. This puzzle has whetted my appetite. Good morning, Watson.
Good morning.
I have to say that in matters of routine, you're reliable almost to a fault. 8 o'clock and you're washed, shaved and more than half-dressed. Can you do without breakfast?
Forgo breakfast?
Oh, I'm not sure.
A postponement only, I promise you.
Well, in that case,
I suppose... Oh, splendid. It's time we went down to St. Luke's. Soames will be in a dreadful fidget until we tell him something positive.
Have you anything positive to tell him?
I think so.
You've formed some conclusion?
Yes, my dear Watson, I have solved the mystery.
But what fresh evidence have you got?
Aha! It's not for nothing that I've turned myself out of bed at the untimely hour of 6. I've put in 2 hours' hard work and covered at least 5 miles, and I've something to show for it. Look at these.
Why, there are the 2 pieces of clay that we found in Soames' rooms yesterday.
And now look.
Another piece of clay. A third piece.
Yesterday we had 2, today we have 3. And it's a fair argument that where number 3 came from is also the source of numbers 1 and 2. Eh, Watson?
Well, it's a fair argument, yes, but...
Now, Watson, put an end to your toilet and let's hasten to St. Luke's, where, if I'm any judge of character, Mr. Soames will be in a fair state of fret.
Thank heavens that you have come. I feared that you'd given up in despair. What am I to do? The hour of decision is upon us.
You can let the examination proceed.
But one of the candidates...
He shall not compete.
You know him?
I think so. And I will demonstrate it to you. But first, please call your servant Bannister.
Bannister?
Do as I say.
Oh. Bannister, will you come here, please?
If this matter is not to become public, Soames, we must give ourselves certain powers and resolve ourselves into a small private court-martial. So, I shall occupy this armchair. Yes, let's position it so that its back's against the light. Yes, good. Now, you, Soames, place a chair to my right and you, Watson, to my left. Yes. Right, so.
Yes, Mr. Soames? You called? What was it?
Come in, Bannister, and close the door behind you. Will you please tell us the truth about yesterday's incident?
I've told you everything, sir.
Nothing to add?
Nothing at all, sir.
Well, then, I must make some suggestions to you. When you felt faint and sat down in that chair, did you do so in order to conceal some object which would have shown who'd been in the room?
No, sir. Certainly not.
That's only a suggestion. I frankly admit I'm unable to prove it, but it seems to me probable enough that the moment Mr. Soames left you alone, you released the man who was hiding in the bedroom.
There was no man, sir.
Speak up, Bannister.
There was no man, sir.
I'm sorry to hear you saying that, Bannister. Up to now, you may have spoken the truth, but now I know that you've lied.
There was no man, sir.
Come, come, Bannister.
No, sir. There was no one.
Well, in that case, you can give us no further information, but I would like you to remain in the room. Now, Mr. Soames, I'm going to ask you to go up to young Gilchrist and ask him to step down here.
Oh, yes. Though I don't see. Yes, of course.
Yes, Watson, I think it might be best if you were to position yourself by the window. Yes, there you may the better observe what's to follow.
Holmes, I don't quite see.
No, but you will see. I assure you that revelation is at hand. Bannister, you're sure you have nothing to say to us?
No, sir. Nothing, sir.
Very well. From now on, you'll be silent. Stand over there to the bedroom door.
Yes, sir.
Gilchrist is on his way, but I don't...
Would you please resume your seat?
Well,
you want to see me, gentlemen?
Yes, Mr. Gilchrist. Would you please close the door? We are all quite alone here, and no one need ever know one word of what passes between us. We can be perfectly frank with each other. We want to know, Mr. Gilchrist, why you, an honourable man, ever came to commit such an act as you did yesterday.
Bannister!
No, Mr. Gilchrist, sir. I never said a word. Never one word.
No, but you have now. You must see, sir, that your position is hopeless. That your only chance of escaping from public disgrace lies in a frank confession.
Why, you ask, why did I do it? Well, Mr. Holmes, for now I know who you are. I have asked myself that question every moment ever since. Why? Why?
Come, sir. It is human to err. Sit down. Sit down and compose yourself.
Thank you.
Perhaps it would be easier for you if I were to describe what occurred. You must listen carefully and see that I do you no injustice. From the moment, Mr. Soames, that you told me that no one, not even Bannister, could have known that the examination papers were in your room, the case began to take a definite shape in my mind. It seemed an unthinkable coincidence that a man should dare to enter the room, and that, by chance, on the very day the paper should be on that table. I dismissed that. The man who...